Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
What is going on, Paddle and Fin Nation? Matt Gibson here with another show, doing Fishing for Noobs again, filling in for Sean while he's taking care of some family stuff. Thoughts and prayers to you, Sean, and your family, bud. Hope you get back soon. Tonight's going to be a little bit of an interesting one for me. Bringing on Matt Nuttall from Moving Water Outfitters. That's where I've met Matt, and Matt's a fly fisherman, so a little bit of change of pace for us. Going to talk some fly fishing, and particularly fly fishing for smallmouth. So without further ado, I will bring on our guest tonight, Mr. Matt Nuttall. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to see you, bud.
Hey, you too, man. I know we've been seeing a lot of each other with the boat show going on, but not really. I mean, we really haven't talked much fishing. It's mostly been kayak stuff and some stuff we can't talk about on the air.
Yeah, a lot of new canoe stuff and a lot of stuff not on the air. That is correct.
Yeah. So if you would, just take a brief moment, kind of introduce yourself, some background and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. My name is Matt Nuttall, and I've been fishing since I could hold a pole. I grew up on the southeast side of Franklin Township, and we had a bunch of land and a pond, so there was three things to do: hunt, fish, or chop wood. I've been fly fishing since I've been about 8 years old. I really haven't conventional fish since I was probably 16 or 17. Really focused on that. In the last year, I've started my own guide business, my own tying business called Fightin' Flies. And then I work at the shop full time. So you can pretty much say I fish or tie or guide for a living.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's been, a month ago now. I was fortunate enough to get out in a wrap with you and do a little predator fishing. I know that's something that you're kind of getting into and looking at this year for your guide service as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited. The day we went, the funniest part of the day was the next morning, waking up and her stomach still hurt and face hurt from laughing so much. And had a really good day, got some really good pike, nice size, heavy pike, and even missed a muskie that day. Yeah. That was a hoot. It was great. And you got to see us fly fishermen at work and a little bit at our expense. So,
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny. I've been around fly fishermen for a long time. With supporting Moving Water Outfitters and before that Wildcat Creek Outfitters. And I would say that some of the best friends I have in this world are fly fishermen, but I don't fly fish. And like, you guys have all these crazy names for flies and all that stuff. So I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about most of the time. But man, what I find really, really interesting anyways is, I came up to the shop and there's, you guys have that group of guys that come in, and those group of guys have now embraced me, and we just talk fishing, man. That's what it comes down to. So, it was really great getting out with you and Ian on the water. Definitely opened my eyes and just seeing the technique differences between conventional fishing and that fly fishing and kind of where worlds collide. I think that was just awesome. And for anybody out there that is intimidated by fly fishermen or any of that, I would encourage you to become friends with those guys, because they have a ton of knowledge of things that going on in the water and on land, and they are very, very tuned into what's going on. So I would encourage anybody out there to reach out to a fly fisherman, and don't hesitate in doing that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny you say that, because one of the stereotypes of fly fishing is it's like a very hoity toity, uppity, mm-hmm. you know, kind of sport. Well, if you've talked to me for more than 13 seconds, you'd realize that's just not who I am. Yeah. I'm a good old boy, just like everybody else. Just love to be out on the water. The whole point is, for me, I don't care if you're conventional fishing, fly fishing, tinkara, whatever you're doing, I want you out on the water, because that's what's going to be best for us, both physically and emotionally, honestly. And that's what it's all about, is sharing stories. I was no less excited about when Ian caught his pike on his fly rod than when you caught yours on God knows what that lure was called, because you've got some crazy names too.
So. Yeah, in all fairness, we do too. Yeah, that was a slobber knocker chatter.
Yeah. I remember the first time you said that, I was like, yeah. What's it called again?
Exactly. But I, you know, kind of want to focus tonight on, if we can, a little bit on kind of river fishing, and particularly a kind of smallmouth. So if a guy was just starting out with fly fishing, what are kind of the must have? Obviously he's got to have a rod and reel, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, so first off, I only fly fish on rivers. You know, it's very, very rare. Maybe once a year I get out on a lake, or once a year I get out on salt water. So I'm all about river fishing. So for starting out, what you really need is a rod and a reel setup. And the whole idea of the $1,000 rods and the $1,000 reels and stuff like that really doesn't, it's not what you need, especially starting out. It's, the way I compare it is to people who drink bourbon and really love bourbon. Would you give somebody your nicest bottle of bourbon who's never had bourbon before? Well, no, because they wouldn't be able to appreciate it or really know. And same with fly fishing. When you're trying to spend money on your gear, the number one thing you should put your money into is your fly line, because that's going to make everything easier for you. Your rod. Then after that, your wading gear. Everything else is at the bottom. Your reel is the least important thing, especially with smallmouth. So I really recommend getting combo kits. And I'm a big Fairbanks guy, or Sage guy. And Reddington makes a combo called the Wrangler kit. It's perfect for smallmouth. Six weight is about ideal for smallmouth in Indiana. That's what you just need to start out with.
And when you say six weight, what are you talking about?
Yeah. So the way the rods are labeled are based off their weight and the length. And so you go from zero all the way up to 16. 90% of your fly fishermen are going to be using things between 4 to 10 at the most. And so what you just need to know is, like, the weight of the rod doesn't really represent the fish. It represents the fly you're going to throw. Okay. So the six weight's perfect for, you can throw, you know, top water, subsurface, or deep flies.
And then this might impress you a little bit, but the, you actually size the line that same way. Is that right? Yep. Or no?
Okay. As usual, I am impressed by you. And yes, no, you're absolutely right. So you size the line, but really you size the line based off of what you're going to do. So like for smallmouth, 90% of the time you're throwing streamers. Not a lot of guys are going out there bobber fishing for smallmouth. And if you are, God bless you. It's just not my party. And so what I actually do with fly fishing, or I'm sorry, streamer fishing for smallmouth, is I like to have a heavier weighted line. So they actually make lines that may be a six weight, but it's weighted like an eight weight. And so that helps you, as somebody who's new, it actually helps you load the rod and cast farther and cast better.
Gotcha. When you talk, you know, kind of streamer fishing, that's
basically all conventional fishing. So everything you do conventional fishing is essentially a streamer, where you're trying to imitate a bait fish or a crawdad or some sort of moving object as prey.
Gotcha. And so that Reddington combo, kind of what's the price tag on something like that?
Yeah, so it's $249.99. But the best part about it with that combo is that it comes with a rod, reel, fly line, case, leader, which leader is the actual, like, what you guys would call fishing line, mm-hmm. that goes to the fly or the lure. And all of that is included, also with a lifetime warranty by Fairbanks, which is a subsidiary, you know, Reddington, Sage. they're just absolutely amazing. I've never had any problem. I guide with wranglers, and they're just a very budget friendly system.
Yeah, I know. It seems like every time I'm in the shop, those things are, it seems like somebody comes in and buys one. So
yeah, so I mean, it's, you know, we try to be a very honest shop. And when you come in and said, hey, you know, I've never fly fished before, the first thing I'm doing is I'm taking you away from the expensive rods. You just don't feel honest doing that. I guess in your kind of world, it'd be like somebody who's never fished before starting off with a top of the line Shimano reel, right?
Yeah. And, you know, kind of getting into kind of the must haves of fly fishing, you know, if you had, can you walk us through, you know, three or four or five, you know, must have flies and kind of describe what they are? I know for me, like, I'm a topwater junkie, so I'm like, give me the popper all the time. That's all I want to throw. But I understand, yeah. Like right now, for instance, here in Indiana, you know, it's in the 40s, 50 degrees, so topwater is just not going to be there.
Yeah, it, you know, it's really interesting because I'm the exact opposite. I love streamers and watching the fish chase and hit those a lot more than topwater. Now, do I fish topwater a lot? Yes, because that's what my clients want to do. Mm-hmm. But what I've kind of noticed is you really get some big, big fish that are chasing bait because it's a quick, easy meal and really trying to figure out how to present those bait to them so that it looks like it's in distress. A really good example, smallmouth love to sit in slower water. And so you throw the fly into current and it kind of tumbles. They'll come out and use the momentum of the current to hit that fly and try to get back to it's the least amount of effort as possible. It's kind of like 3 a.m. on a Saturday ordering Taco Bell for us, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's great. But so, like, you know, one of the flies that we talk about is like this one right here. I just happen to have some. I'm in my office with my desk, and it's this right here. It's called a bad hair day. And as you can see, it just looks like a giant fluff ball. Okay, it looks like nothing, looks like nothing, it looks terrible. But if I would take this and make this wet, it kind of slicks back into like a minnow pattern now.
Yep.
And so when this moves in the water, it moves side to side. And this is, in my opinion, my number one smallmouth fly. I'm fishing, this is what I'm using.
So to equate that to a conventional lure, the best way I could describe it would be a fluke. It looks very flukish to me, soft water or a soft plastic jerk bait style.
It moves like a glide bait.
Yeah.
If that's the right term.
Yeah. No. I think that's very accurate. Do you get wrapped up in colors with that, or is it always white, or?
So the pattern that I fish with, you can tie it in any kind of color you want. And in my box, my guide box, you'll see it in about seven different colors. Of the seven different colors, I only fish this color. I'll fish the other colors if they ask for it, but it's kind of hard to see with the camera, but it's all white with some flash. And then at the very top here is this what's called gray minnows, minnow belly.
Okay.
And because of the way it moves in that white, it's a visual eat. So the same reason, Matt, why you like topwater, this is why I like streamers. It's everything's visual. You'll not feel anything. This thing will just be going along, and then out of nowhere, you'll see an 18, 19-inch smallmouth come up and inhale it.
Let's not lie now. Like 18, 19-inch fish, have you ever caught one of those?
So I have, yes. The big, the biggest smallmouth I've ever caught was actually on the white, and it was a 19.5-inch smallmouth on this exact fly.
Yeah, I'll make sure to edit out that river that you just mentioned.
Oh, yeah. So it's not commonly known. I meant Kankakee or something like that, right? Yeah. So, but I mean, yeah, and I had a client pull a 21.5-inch smallmouth off of a Clouser form that we call a purple dart, which would be my number two fly to recommend, especially for newcomers. There's not a lot of skill to it. So when you throw it out, you can just retrieve it as slow or as fast as you want. The hook point rides up so that when you hit logs, it just climbs kind of all over it. And it's a very deadly and effective fly. It kind of looks like nothing, but looks like everything again.
And what was that one called again?
It's called a purple dart. You can look it up under Orvis's catalog. Essentially, it's a Clouser minnow with purple on one side and brown on the other. I actually have one right here. So this is a purple dart.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so as you can see here, there's nothing to it. There's flash, there's brown bucktail, and there's purple eye stub. And for some reason, on a certain river that I fish a lot, this is just a very deadly fly. Again, both of these flies were actually introduced to me by Jeff Conrad. Jeff Conrad is another guide who is a very dear friend of mine and has really taught me a lot. And those are the two flies I fish the most next to a crayfish pattern of some sort.
So those two we just talked about, kind of minnow-ish, like bait fish style baits or flies, sorry.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
What situations and kind of what water and what are you looking for when you're throwing that versus something else?
Yeah, so as I said, the bad hair day is one of those flies that, if you're asking me as a guide, I'm looking for clear conditions. I'm looking for clear water. I'm looking for – so when I'm guiding, I tell all my clients we're looking for three things, right? We're looking for structure, we're looking for transitions, and we're looking for moving water, okay? Those are the three things that we're looking for. If you get two of those things together, you can almost guarantee there's a fish there. If you get all three together, it's a guarantee we'll get a fish. Because the smallmouth just loves sitting on that structure and ambushing into that. So those the bad hair day is when I look for that the most, okay? Now, that being said, when I personally go fish, I'll go fish it all the time because it's just my favorite fly. The purple dart is when I pull that out. That is kind of like my Hail Mary. This will catch anything, whether it's perfect out or if it's muddy as could be. It's going to pull fish off the bottom. It'll pull fish at 4 to 8 inches. It also is a really good fly based off its size that will catch rock bass. It'll catch all kinds of different panfish. We've actually caught a 9-pound catfish off of this fly, which was my client about died on a 6-weight rod where the catfish should have been on like a 9-weight rod.
Yeah.
It'll just catch a little bit of everything. And so especially if you're first starting off, this is the fly we're going to start with. So we get some early success and then we can really explore the rest of the day.
Kind of a confidence bait, or I'm sorry, I keep on calling it a bait. Confidence fly.
You can call it a bait. It's this whole line between conventional fly fishing doesn't really exist. It's a bait. It's a lure. It's a fly. It's whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. So that's a real confidence builder for your clients and sometimes for you.
Yeah. I mean, as a guide, you're going out. There is nothing better than in the first 20 minutes you get a smallmouth. And the rest of the day, it's like, whoo, all right. Now, as a guide, I can kind of relax and enjoy instructing the clients.
So are you throwing those, like if you and I went out right now, would you take those two baits with you right there, or those two flies with you?
I wouldn't take the bad hair day because right now, I've been seeing a lot of people saying they're catching smallmouth right now subsurface, and that's great. I would love to see it. It's not something I would probably put a lot of merit into or a lot of faith into. I'd be fishing off the bottom right now looking at wintering holes, and that's what this right here, this Clouser, will sit on the bottom and you can drag it.
Gotcha.
And you can even throw it and literally hit structure with it and let it bounce off of it and try to get a reaction bite out of that. So yeah, I would be fishing. This is kind of where I'd be going to right now. Is it's a crayfish imitation. Again, as I told you, you know, half of my business is tying flies. So this is just kind of like a version of a crayfish I tie. It's a guide's version. It's really quick. I'm sure there's a pattern out there. It's not mine. That doesn't really exist anymore, right? Yeah. But all this is just a heavy dumbbell eye, and it's just the right color of a crayfish for Indiana, which we all know there's different color crayfish, but just kind of moves along the bottom. It's got rubber legs. Essentially, if you find a fly that has flash, rubber legs, and zonker, which is what this has, zonker is like a rabbit strip.
Gotcha.
It's almost guaranteed to catch a fish. Okay. It's like what smallmouth really like.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at a conventional side, I would call that like a finesse football head jig is kind of what it reminds me of.
So. Yeah, sure.
So that's three. What else you have? What else you have there?
Yeah, so the next fly that I would say is my absolute favorite fly to fish and to tie and to sell. And I don't have one in front of me actually, which is shocking since it's the one I tie the most. But it's actually called a dungeon. And so if you look at my business loco, and I'm sorry, but that's kind of called a dungeon. And if you look it up, it's a Kelly Gallops version. It's actually the actual name of it is a sex dungeon, but you know, typically in the shop, I just call it dungeon. And it's an articulated fly to look like a bait fish. And I tie that into a shad pattern.
Okay.
And it, in central Indiana, it just absolutely kills. But you know, so the that's one
you're like, you're moving.
Like that one's going to be more intermediate to, you know, expert level when you're fishing it, because it's two hooks. It's articulated. It can be as small as my pinky, but it can be as long as 6 inches. When we went pike fishing that one day, the fly that Ian was throwing at first was considered a sex dungeon, and it was 7 inches long.
Yeah, and what's really interesting, you hit on it earlier, and what I was really surprised with coming from the conventional side and watching what you guys were doing, is how much you guys are really using that current in your favor to make a fly kind of, I'll call it drift and then bob down and then be very, very natural. I know that's one thing that I picked up almost immediately with what you guys were doing. And it's, are you thinking and you're setting up your fly and your cast kind of along that same route?
Yeah. And so we're actually even tying our flies in the same route. So we want our, so a lot of times in conventional fishing, you guys get a lot of like a reaction bite out of like, so like spinner baits are, from what I remember, are very reactionary.
Yep.
So flies really aren't like, we're trying to imitate what they see in the water. Every now and then we'll tie some crazy color that they never see. But you know, you're very right in like, okay, so I've got a downward, fast current and that's going to go into this log. So I'm going to throw 3 feet above it so that when it swings, I want it to go just underneath that log. And that's how close and precise we're trying to be.
Gotcha.
Now, that being said, there are limitations, and you made quite a note of it, is the distance that we can throw, right?
Yeah.
We got to really wind up and get a nice, you know, cast if we're trying to throw, you know, 40, 50 plus feet, where you guys can kind of just rip it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll tell the story on myself a little bit here, but as we were fishing – you know, and watching the guys, you know, I was in the back of the raft, so I was really trying to focus on what they were doing to try to learn from these guys, which I learned a tremendous amount that day. But one of the things I said is, hey, I'm not trying to be a blank here, but but is that as far as you guys can cast? And both of you daggone near broke your necks looking back at me. Like it was the worst thing I ever said.
And everything you said was just accurate.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it is amazing. It was really, you know, telling to me how close you guys really are to the fish in comparison to what us conventional guys worry about.
Yeah, I mean, we really try to. I mean, so I know we're talking about smallmouth, but pike in particular. I mean, we really try to look at exactly where they are, what they're doing, what depth, and even like we try to match like colors, right? Where smallmouth is not as much. I mean, usually there's about four or five different colors I use, and there's certain patterns, and there's a couple techniques I do. But I can almost, knock on wood, guarantee you're going to catch smallmouth. Are you going to catch a big one? You know, I hope so, but I can guarantee that where with pike, it's much more, it's a predator fish. You really have to think about them. But yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because there's other guys out there that they'll fish completely different than I do, and they'll be just as successful, which is awesome. That's why it's almost like it's its own art.
So you have a few more flies there that you want to show us and kind of talk through as
Yeah,
favorite episode?
sure. Yeah, sure. Give me a second. Let me see what I got. Oh, I mean, this is just another confidence one that you kind of said, talked about earlier. So all this is a leech fly. That's all this is trying to look like a leech. And it's obviously a bigger one for smallmouth. And it's an egg sucking leech. And honestly, are there egg sucking leeches in our water? No. But it has zonker, which is that rabbit. So when it gets wet, it moves. And it's got rubber legs. And
And
it's
it's
got a
black.
hot and it's and it's got a hot spot, and it's black, right? So like it just has everything that you'd kind of want out of a fly to move around and to catch smallmouth, because it's just you're trying to mimic that. And then I guess the last one I'll show you is actually, I will say this one is actually my design. So this is a smallmouth fly that I've kind of been working on and designing. So the whole thing is I'm trying to look for something that's quick to tie and that's really effective. And so I haven't thought of a name or anything like that for this. Let me see if I can grab something that'll hold it easily. So I don't have a name, I said, as for this yet, but yeah, so all it is like, you know how I keep saying, and if you ever hang around me in person, you'll hear me say it, zonker, flash, rubber legs, so guarantee. Well, this one has all of that. So it has a zonker tail. It's got some red mallard here to give it like a gill plate. It's got some splash in it, and it's got some dubbing in the front with rubber legs so that when this gets wet, it completely compresses and looks like a glass-like minnow, and then these legs flutter. Like I said, I've been working on this, especially for anybody who fishes in Indiana in middle July to arguably September. It's low water, and that's what this is for. The eyes on here are bead chain, which are very very light, so this thing will float in about 1 to 2 inches of water.
So when these flies get wet, Matt, and they slick down, do they stay that way, or will they actually come back? Do they?
No, so they'll actually slick down, which is why, one of the things I always tell people when I tie flies is I tie flies to catch fish, not fishermen, right? I'll make them as beautiful as you want, but the realistic is what does it look like when it's wet, right? And so that fly I just showed you, I got it wet, and so now it's completely slicked down. So when I tie this fly, that's actually what I want it to look like. So the soft materials that are in here, and even the flash that's kind of sticking out, when I pull this in the water, it's going to move like this. Very fluke-like, as you were talking earlier. Like we're trying to make that movement to get the fish. And as you can see, the hook's sticking out pretty well now. So there's not a interference with that hook gape. But it stays slicked down, and what you want is like when you pull and you stop, is the material will pulse, and that is what drives them nuts.
Gotcha. So to recap, we go through your top five there again real quick.
Yeah, so top five, I would have to say probably my number one is my bad hair day, the one I fish the absolute most. Number two would have been the sex dungeon. I don't have a one in front of me, but it looked like my logo. After that, you know, the confidence builder would be that purple dart. It's probably the one that clients fish the most with me. After that would be then, of course, some sort of crawdad or crayfish imitation.
Gotcha.
And then the last one would be the one that I'm kind of working on. And a lot of people watching this would be like, did you really just say out of all your smallmouth, none of them are top water? Yes, you know, yes, it's my, just my opinion, that and dollars with a cup of coffee. And a lot of people, if you're going to fish top water, you're going to want a blue boogle bug. That's all you need.
Yeah. I have one fly rod and it has one of those tied on.
Yeah. Blue boogle bug is the, probably the most favorite top water fly minus a wiggle minnow. But starting out, I would not start with a wiggle minnow because it can be very technical on how to hook the fish.
Yeah.
And you can miss a lot of fish if you are, instead of strip setting, you're kind of, we call it trout setting, but really it's like Bassmaster Classic setting, right? Yeah. It's like how Ian set the hook, the Ian Sinisek. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that brings up, you know, it sounds like you've kind of set us straight. You're kind of setting us down that line. You've got five flies to kind of start out somebody with. It sounds like they all do kind of something different. So I guess, should we talk about the cast next, or should we talk about the hook set next?
I would probably say talk about the hook set. And you know, and before we go any farther, you know, I'm at Moving Water every single day. We give, we have free fly fishing classes in the spring where we actually teach you how to cast and all of that. Again, that's free. We do private lessons as well. But, you know, if it's something you really want to be interested in or find out more information about, please feel free to call Moving Water and ask for me or Mike. Mike's the owner. He's absolutely awesome. He's a great fisherman as well. There's not a dumb question. You know, we're trying to break down barriers. Like, just reach out to us, and we're here to help however we can.
Yeah, I will say, man, I've been in some fly shops before, and I felt extremely uncomfortable as soon as you walk into Moving Water Outfitters. It is like coming home, man. Like, it's you know, like, everybody in there's, you know, it's just like Cheers, you know, Norm, you know, the whole deal. But I guess one question for you, man, like,
hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
How, when you're out there on the road, you know, because not all of our listeners are here in central Indiana. You know, a lot of listeners are in the Midwest here, but how do you find a good fly shop? Like, what are the telltale signs of a good, solid fly shop?
Well, and that's a great question because, as you know, I travel all over fishing. Like, I fish, I fished, you know, last year, I think I fished in 7 different states and 3 different countries. And I just have been all over, whether I'm fishing or helping people or being at shows and things like that. So a couple things that I would say that I look for in, like, a really great fly shop. The first thing I'm looking, and by the way, all three things have nothing to do with what's in the store.
Okay.
So when I go into a good fly shop, the last thing I'm really looking at is what's in the store. The first thing I'm looking at is, like, when I come in, am I greeted? Am I acknowledged? And then, you know, my favorite thing, and if you come into our store, I guarantee I'll ask you this. I'll ask you, so you've been fishing? And be able to have that conversation about fishing. And then the last one that I really look for in a fly shop is information. There's this real big stereotype in fly fishing of like gatekeeping. And I know that's the same way in conventional fishing where people don't want to talk about river they're on or anything like that. And, you know, as a fly shop, you're there as like a encyclopedia. And so if you're coming in and you want to become a better trout fisherman or bass fisherman, or you want to catch fish here or there, to be able to have the knowledge to be able to have that discussion with you and share that information and not gatekeep it. You know, if you ask me about how, what's the best way to fish the White River, my response shouldn't be, well, if you book a guided trip with me, I'll show you. No, right. It should be, okay, well, what do you have right now? What are you doing? You know, okay, what budget do you have? Or even like, as you know, we stock, when I say we, Mike Exel, who's amazing in Trout Unlimited, Central Indiana, helps stock Eagle Creek. And so when people come in, they'll ask me, what are they eating? I have no problem going to the exact fly that I use or that I even tie and sell in the store and even show them where I was at and techniques on how I'm doing it. Now, that being said, in order to have such an experience like that in a fly shop, you also need to follow some norms going into a fly shop. You know, if you're going to go in and ask information, don't leave without buying something. You don't need to buy $1,000 rod every time you ask about a good place to fish. Buy some stickers, buy some flies, you know, support our local brick and mortar, because if we don't, they're going to be gone.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing I'm huge on. And I always talk about in the kayak community is support those that support you. Because if you don't, they're gone. And yeah, you're right. Mike Exel is probably one of the most solid guys I know when it comes to supporting any type of community. Yeah. He supports the hell out of any fly fishing thing, Heroes on the Water, all of the veterans things, fishing. He's pivotal in stocking program with the trout. On the kayak side, he's helped with regional events. He's helped with local events. He's helped with Indiana Kayak Anglers. He's helped with. So, yeah, I mean, and I kind of asked you that loaded question there of how do you pick out a good fly shop. If you Google Moving Water Outfitters, you're going to see their names associated with a lot of different things. So yeah. I would encourage you to Google stuff like that, and you're going to see who supports community and who doesn't very quickly.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I know Mike's my boss and all that stuff, but, I mean, one – he would be losing his mind right now if he knew we were talking about him.
Oh yeah.
Super humble guy. You would never know of anything that he does. Really wouldn't. Yeah. But no, he definitely goes out of his way. I mean, one of our biggest partners in the shop is Project Healing Waters, where we help with either discounts or materials or guiding or instructions for veterans and helping them cope. I led, you know, a fly tying class for a group of 22 veterans that I had an absolute amazing time with. We did a guided trip with 8 ladies who were veterans. I mean, just that kind of stuff. Being in the community and being involved is really important to me. And is it easier and cheaper to buy stuff online? Yeah, it is. I'm going to just be honest. It is. I would argue as a fly tire that you're never going to know what materials you're going to get. But even before I was associated working with Moving Waters, they really showed their colors to me really at the beginning and really took care of me. And, you know, if we don't take care of each other, no one will. And that's – so even if something drastic would happen and I would change careers, Moving Waters will always have my business.
Yeah, and I might get a little hate about this, I guess. But, I mean, same way on the conventional side. Stop buying from Tackle Warehouse. Get up and go to Schwartz's Tackle. Stop ordering from Cabela's and get your ass in a local shop, because they will disappear on us and we need them. And it's the same way on the fly side. Get out there, support those businesses that support you and your community.
Yeah. And by the way, Schwartz is actually a great store. I've been in it before and I don't know what half the stuff is in there, but when I walked in, the first thing is, you know, they asked me, are you fishing today?
Yep.
And don't get me wrong, I'm in all fishing clothes, so yes, yep. I am. But but no, I mean they're just great people, and I'm up by them a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah,
I mean, and they help provide access to the river and all kinds.
Yes, they do.
So yeah, you know, that's another important part of it too, is making sure that we still have that access to our rivers and things.
So, yeah, if you're reading anything that's going on out west, it is terrifying. And that's actually more on the fly side, honestly, mm-hmm. because there's all these rivers that are being owned now privately where you can't even touch the water.
And
as a kind of like a hot take, like, and I understand this isn't a popular opinion, and that's fine. I don't believe anybody should be able to own the water, period. I don't mm-hmm. care if there's a gated community. I think if it's water, we should have access to it, period. And there's a lot of people that don't agree with that, and I'm 100% fine with that.
Yep.
It's just a resource that we deserve to have access to, both for physical but in mental reasons. I mean,
yep, absolutely, absolutely. But after that short commercial break that we just went on there, let's get back to fly fishing. So,
yeah.
So you mentioned kind of hook set. Mm-hmm. So I take it this isn't one of those, you know, that you just wait, and then cross their eyes, unless your name's.
Yeah. There's no crossing their eyes. I mean, it's the only time you're going to do that is what's called a trout set. And that's when you're nymphing, and nymphing is a very fancy word for bobber fishing. Fly fishermen will hate that I say that, but it's bobber fishing. And that's where you're going to be, where you're holding the rod, you're going to be going to what they call that, you know, six to midnight, right?
Yeah.
But for when you're streamer fishing, you know, all those things I just went through with smallmouth, the best thing to actually do is to take the rod and you want a strip set. And the strip set is like, imagine you're starting a chainsaw, right? You want to take the fly line and you want to pull it. And what that does is, if this is the fly and it's in their mouth and you pull it, it cinches and hooks it in. Okay. Yeah. When you lift, the bass have enough time to open their mouth and it just comes right out of their mouth. So, you know, there are circumstances when you should trout set, or as I call it, Bassmaster Classic setting. And those are a lot less rare, especially when it comes to smallmouth. I mean, you can with smallmouth with topwater. You know, the old saying is, if you're throwing like a terrestrial, something like that, when they eat it, you're supposed to say, I think the original term was, you say, God save the queen, and then you set the hook. Well, I can't do that. I'm a hillbilly. So I say 1776, and then I set the hook.
Or got him.
There's one.
Yeah. So somebody getting starting out, you know, I'm thinking about water conditions here. I know that in the summer when it's super, super hot, super clear, I know talking with you guys, because you guys are open, you know, talking with like you, talking with Mike, and then talking with like Mark Dixon, who's on the water quite a bit as well. And it's just a great wealth of knowledge.
He's a good guy.
Fishing in general. It seems like you guys are still really catching them good when the water's low, the water's clear, to where, you know, us conventional guys, we need a little bit of help. We need, shade. We need, a little bit more current, a little more this. And I think that's because our technique or what we're using at the time isn't as soft and as natural as what you guys are doing. Is that correct?
I mean, I would say most of that is correct. The one thing I would say is that we have an option to downsize in a way that you guys just can't. I mean, I think we talked about the boat show this week, where there was some special rod that was throwing flies. And even then, it had to be a pretty heavy fly. Mm-hmm. You know, we're able to – one of the things that I specialize in is I really like what's called micro-sizing things. So like the dungeon that we were talking about earlier, the original pattern is 6 inches long. Yeah. I have micro-sized it down to where it's about 2 inches long. So the smaller your bait is and the lower and clearer the water is, the more chance you're going to have another fish.
Okay.
You know, the old saying, big, big, big fly catches big fish or big lure catch big fish. Well, yeah, it's because the small ones can't eat it. Yeah. That's why.
Right.
Now, besides that, it also really, when the water gets low, it kind of concentrates fish for us. So we read the water, like, you know, as you've been with me in a boat, you'll come up to a section that looks great. And I'm like, nope, this is going on. This is going on. I've been here. I've seen this. We're going to completely skip this.
Yeah.
Where somebody who maybe is not on the river a lot, that's a little bit harder for them to see or for them to, you know, to do.
Gotcha. So, like, for me, right now, all I am hoping for and all I am praying for to get out on the water is some consecutive warm days. Consecutive warm days followed by consecutive warm nights.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what fly fishermen are praying for as well?
It depends on the species. If you're talking about smallmouth, absolutely, because smallmouth, you know, another thing that kind of goes into fly fishing, and it seems really weird, but we really study the fish, or we try to study the fish the best we can. So for smallmouth, you know, they're a warm water fish. So the warmer the water gets and the more consistent, smallmouth are very much like, you know, toddlers, right? You want consistency. You want it to be the same. When there's a change, they go back in their house, as you would say. You know, when the water blows out and gets muddy, you know, I'll have clients say, well, why is it it's harder to catch them when the water's muddy? Say, well, when there's a tornado going on, do you hang out outside your house or do you stay in the house?
Yeah.
And that's so, because if you look at it, you know, smallmouth may eat once a day, you know, every other day, or depending on what they're eating, especially the large ones, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're looking at.
Gotcha. So as far as
but now with trout or even like other cold water species like pike, we tend to look for it to be colder and colder.
Gotcha. So it's very dependent on what is going on.
It's dependent on what you're fishing for, and sometimes even where you're fishing. Because sometimes there's places where it can run a little colder, and you'll still do just as well. Or there's some places where, like, I believe there's a certain river in central Indiana that fishes a lot better dirty than it does clear.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And so we are on the Paddle and Fin Network, and it is Kayak Fishing Podcast. Can you kind of walk us through how you utilize your kayak? I know it's kind of tough to do with clients, things like that, but if you're going out checking some rivers or just checking some spots, kind of how do you utilize your kayak specifically for fly fishing?
Yeah, well, so the first thing I'll tell you is, I don't know if you can tell on the camera, but I am 6'3", 300 plus pounds. So I am a New Canoe Unlimited guy. I bought it 3 years ago, and the first spring and summer, I put 100 days on the water with it. And so for fly fishing One, I don't fish in my kayak as much as I used to because I have a raft and I guide. But anytime I'm scouting when I'm alone. So like when you and Ian and I went out, we were kind of scouting. So I didn't bring my kayak. But if I'm alone, I'm on my kayak. And kayaking is one of those things that it is easier now to get into fly fishing because of how kayaks are set up now than ever. And whether you fish Old Town, Bonafide, Native, New Canoe, Wilderness Systems, you know, they're all set up to help you. You can fly fish out of them. So what I'm looking for, how I set up my kayak for fly fishing, is very, very simple. So take whatever kayak you own and every accessory you have on it, take it off.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live, only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So, with fly fishing, we're not casting with the weight of the fly or the lure or the bait. We're casting with the weight of the line. So that line is all over. Anything that's sticking up, it can and will get caught on. So on my unlimited, new canoe unlimited, army camo, I literally have my paddle, my seat, and my black pack that goes on the back. That's it. There's nothing else. There's no rod holders. There's no paddle holder. Would I love all those things? Absolutely. But you don't want your line to get tangled up on anything. You know, a lot of times, you know, people think about standing up in their kayak to fly fish. It's really not necessary with the new kayaks.
Yeah.
Now, if you're getting into some kayaks that what would be considered like more economic or not premium kayaks, which there's nothing wrong with those kayaks. There's a perfect time and place for those. But with those, you're really mainly going to have to get out to fish in because of stability. One of the things that drew me to my unlimited was when I demoed it 3 years ago. I believe I actually demoed it with either you or Richie. I'm going to go with you because I like you more. but I actually practiced casting standing up in it, then sat in the seat and realized how high I sat up, and I never stood up again.
Now, do you find yourself clipping the kayak to you and doing any waiting, or are you 100% in the kayak 100% of the time, or is it a mix, or depending on what time of year it is?
So the first time, first couple times I ever went out, I used to fish the Wildcat a lot, and the Wildcat is infamous for being super low water, which means there's
a bunch of trash.
Yeah. But then there was like random holes because the water gets so low, the bass stick into them. So when I first started fishing with them, I would kind of paddle somewhere, and then I would get out, and then I would fish and wade, and I'd get back in and go down. And I realized with the boat specifically I was using, that was a waste of energy.
Uh-huh.
So now if you and I went out kayak fishing tomorrow, my goal is to not ever get out of the kayak.
Really?
You know, I really try to stay in it. I use an anchor wizard, which was something I forgot to say. I use an anchor wizard so I can kind of anchor myself and be wherever I'm at. It's just a lot more comfortable and easy for me to stay in the boat. And honestly, you know, like I said, I'm a big guy. Like every time I have to get out of that boat, it's me getting up and moving around, and you have to be careful about slipping and stuff like that, or I could just stay on the boat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I would tell you, if I had a boat that was much less comfortable, I'd be getting out a lot.
Yeah.
Probably my first kayak when I was younger, or when I borrowed somebody's kayak, I would be getting out a lot. But because of how comfortable the one I have now, which, you know, almost all premium kayaks anymore are extremely comfortable.
Yeah.
But I'm biased because I own an unlimited.
Most people are once you go new canoe, once you go with that unlimited, yeah. Man, it's pretty sweet setup. For multiple reasons.
Yeah, well, I think when I came to demo, I had to fill out an application, and my height and weight automatically put me in the profile. So.
No, we profiled you for sure.
You 100% profiled, right? I was like, I want to do a pungo. Nope, you're over here, the unlimited, buddy.
Yeah. So I guess really the moral of the story is there's don't be intimidated to get out on your kayak and do a little fly fishing. Is there, because you're in a kayak, do you go with a small, like a shorter rod, or are you just, is what it is, I'm fishing my way, this is how I'm comfortable, or?
Yeah, so it just kind of depends what you're fishing for. If you're in a kayak fishing for trout, you may still be using a smaller rod for, yeah, you know, different reasons, but I can't think of a time where I wasn't fishing a 9-foot or a 9.5-foot rod.
So you're not matching
in my kayak.
specifically just because you're in a kayak, you're not taking a 7 foot or an 8 foot rod. You're still taking your favorite rod and reel setup, line setup, and all of that. So you're not doing anything special that you wouldn't do in a raft or anything.
Yeah, absolutely correct. I mean, when I used to really kayak a lot, I always took two rods with me. I took a streamer rod, and then I used to take my like 10 foot 5 weight topwater rod, and so I'd use that to throw like poppers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, the one thing I will say that kayak fishing really showed me how important was a net.
Yeah,
nets. I mean, I have not owned a net outside of trout fishing my entire life. I mean, even when we used to go carp fishing, you get it on the thing and you grab it or whatever.
Yep.
But I've had multiple 19 inch plus bass that I've reached down to grab.
Doink.
And yeah, just breaks the line, just, you know, kicks it right off or breaks the line or kicks the hook out. And a net is super helpful, especially, and I'm going to be honest, it's safer for you and safer for the fish. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people try to grab a fish and they don't grab it, and then they shoot down, it snaps the rod, or they flip the boat. It doesn't need to be a monster. I'm very, very blessed that, Matt, you turned me on to a great net that I cannot wait to take out. Yeah. It's for pike, so it is definitely on the large size. But
do not take that kayak fishing.
Yeah. But the net that you use by the same company is like perfect. Yeah. If I remember correctly, it's probably only a foot long handle on it.
Yep. RS Nets. You know, check them out. Yeah. I've been using that. So I actually had the opposite happen to me with nets. When I first started kayak fishing, I was continuously either missing fish or knocking the fish off by hitting the lure out of their mouth. I have now changed my ways and I am back to being a net man. So, nets are, and I think you really hit on it too. It's really good for the fish too. You can do fish revivals,
yes,
and things like that. So it's especially in the summertime, when there's been a big fight by smallmouth, especially some of those larger smallmouth. I mean, those are our resources. Those are old fish, you know, especially here in the Midwest. They don't have a whole lot of grow time. You know, 17, 18 inch fish is a mature fish up here. So, you know, I've really been I've always been extremely cautious with it. But I've been getting more and more cautious of handling those fish and really the revival portion, especially in warmer water. Mm.
So we had a guest speaker that came the day after the Heartland show, and his name was Stu Neville or Neville. I believe it's Neville. And he's a muskie guide up at Hayward Fly Fishing. He's a great guy. But he said something to me that really has stuck with me. He's like, if we're going to practice catch and release, then we might as well release a living fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, saying that, I was like, well, that makes, you know, and what he was specifically talking about was water condition and temperature and reviving the fish. When he catches, you know, a 45 inch muskie, as soon as he catches it, he doesn't unhook it and throw it in. It's going to go belly up. Yep. You take that, you use your net and you use it to revive the fish.
Yep.
And smallmouth is a great example. I mean, you get them into some faster moving water and just hold, and it takes an extra 10 or 15 seconds.
Yep.
Especially if you're doing, you know, like when I'm guiding, sometimes we catch a fish and we take it and we hold it up and we do a picture. So we're keeping it out of the water a little bit. If you're doing, you know, turning stuff, you're having to put it on a catch board and take a picture of it. Just take an extra 15 seconds, revive that fish. And, It helps it so much. And where I really noticed it was getting more into streamer fishing for trout and even pike. As you saw when we released Ian's, you know, monster fish, we sat there and revived it for a few minutes before he took off. I mean, it's a lot of fish.
Yep, absolutely. And that's also one thing that I've always respected about fly guys is, hey, you know, we need to respect this resource.
do you appreciate that? Do you?
I do to a point. I will say sometimes you guys take it to a little bit of an extreme for me, but no.
I agree. I agree.
I do appreciate it. because I am very much that way. I want to make sure that the resources are there for others to use and others in the future to use. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, I'm probably not going to keep a smallmouth, but I'll keep some fish one or two times a year, and I'm going to fry them up and I'm going to enjoy them.
The stereotypical fly fisherman does all catch and release because it's pure and it's great. You and I have talked to this before, if we really want to do what is absolutely best for these fish, probably wouldn't be fishing for them, right? Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to hook them in the face.
Right.
But you know, that is a big part of our community. And I mean, don't sell yourself short, because like, I know IKA and Grubby do, oh my God, they do so many river cleanups. It's pretty awesome. You know what I mean? You know, the organizations coming together have really been doing a great job of helping with our rivers.
Yeah. You know, I'll say that with the White River here, with them having multiple cleanups a year, the resource is just better. It's better for everybody.
And again, that's something Mike helped sponsor, and, you may not always see him on it, but he's always involved.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. One thing I want to hit on, as we're going into the hour here, is what kind of got you into tying your own flies?
So that is actually a really great and deep question, right? So the guy who taught me how to fly fish, I was self-taught. Both my parents, they don't like the outdoors at all. So I think I'm the mailman's kid. I don't know. But the guy who taught me how to tie, I joined a cigar club when I was 18 at a place called Pike Puffers. And there's a guy named Steve Bates. And I was like, yeah, I fly fish. He was like, oh, great. And so he took me fly fishing, an older gentleman. He saw me fly fish and he said, you do not fly fish. So he taught me how to fly fish. And, for my graduation gift, he gave me a fly tying kit that I still have to this day. And he said, here's these two flies. Figure it out. I don't care how you do it. Figure it out. Tie these flies. You tie these flies for me. I'll tie the rest. And I basically tied those two flies for a very long time. Started catching fish on it that really when you catch something on a fly that you make, there's a sense of accomplishment. Like you tricked that fish to catch that. And so as he got older, there's more and more flies he couldn't tie. In the last few years, he gave me all of his fly tying stuff because he's officially cannot tie anymore. And he always gave me feedback on flies and everything like that. And I started to get more and more success. And then honestly, for somebody, for my mental health, tying has been a lifesaver. Not to be like funny and all that stuff. No, I know it sounds corny, yeah. Right? No, but, as a guy, when we talk about like mental health and stuff, it's okay to not be okay. And tying is one of those things that quiets the noise in my head. Yeah. And there's just something soothing about it where I can come to the bench and turn everything off and tie. And then, recently Mike and a couple other people really pushed me to start my own business to tie my own flies and people want them. So now something that helps me as a person, something that I use for my guiding business is now helping me with income for, this thing that keeps me calm.
Yeah. What a tremendous story, man. That's so great. And I get it. I mean, I'm sitting in my quasi office here and, it's not flies, I make my own stuff, man.
And then you come here, it's the same thing. So I'm sitting here at my desk and my entire, I was grabbing. So all my stuff is here. So
I haven't bought one of these things. I don't know what.
Yeah.
I go like the, arr, 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 arr. That's about all I can do with it right now, but we'll fix that.
Oh yeah. It's just so funny to think about like me at 18 with this little wooden box tying flies to kind of where I'm at now.
Yeah.
It's just pretty cool. And it's something I owe everything to a guy named Steve Bates. So
that's awesome. What a great story. So if people want, you know, if they want to buy some flies off of you, where, how, all of that stuff, where can they get a hold of you, man?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different places you can get a hold of me at. You can, of course, on Instagram. My Instagram is FightIn, as in the letter N, flies. Really funny story came up. Well, first, I was going to be calling myself, you know, like Matt Nuttall Guide Service, and my buddies and I had a bunch of beers. He was like, that's stupid. And we came up with Fighting Flies, give yourself a fighting chance at like 1 a.m. So we thought it was a hoot. So you can look me up on Instagram there and you can DM me. You actually can see the flies that I tie and actually see videos and tutorials on how to tie flies. You can also see it on Moving Water Instagram page as well. I manage a lot of the social media and do fly tying videos on there as well. You can call me on my personal cell for tying flies or even a guided trip at 317-847-9141. And you can always call and reach me at the shop and feel free. Like you don't have to text or call me to ask me to buy something. If you have a question or need help, something or need some guidance, just hit me up. We're here to help each other. I'm never going to say no to helping somebody on the phone if I can.
No, I can attest to that. You've definitely answered my call and when I've had questions about things. And yeah, anybody that's even close here to the Indianapolis area, I would highly suggest you get a hold of the folks at Moving Water Outfitters. Go fishing with Matt, go fishing with Mike, and go fishing with Mark. You're going to get three different viewpoints, but you are going to learn every bit of that time that you're on the water with these guys. I know Mark, you know, he's opened up to some conventional stuff. You know, I know that you guys are also open to that as well, but really specialize in fly fishing. So if you want to learn, there's no better way than to get out there. And somebody like Matt, Mark, or Mike, they can take that learning curve from, you know, months to, you know, hours. So really look into that. Any other shout out to anybody else you want to thank? Any other sponsors? Anything else you want to mention before we jump?
Yeah, I mean, so I don't really have sponsors or things like that because everything I do is through the shop. So, you know, I always want to thank Moving Waters and Mike. He's been great to me and my family. You know, I'm trying to think of anybody else really. I mean, actually, you know, huge shout out to like you and the kayak team, because as a guy who doesn't, you know, conventional fish at all, and I have no idea about half the stuff you're talking about, you've always been really good and friendly to me. I would say thank you to like Outcast Sporting Gear. So actually they are one of my, I guess I'm an ambassador. I don't know what you call it, ambassador. I feel embarrassed saying it, but yeah. They have helped put me in a raft so that I can make money. Too, man. Yeah. And as a big guy, it's comfortable, isn't it?
Yep.
And that's what's important. And thanks to, you know, Farbanks, which, you know, the rep is Ben Hunting. He's really done awesome stuff to help me out with gear and help me with gear and stuff I get through all through the shop. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of really, I already mentioned Jeff Conrad earlier because he really helped me a lot, and Steve Bates as well. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of about it.
Awesome, man. Well, we appreciate your time. I'm going to drop you off here. Say goodbye to everybody. Again, thank you. For everything. And yeah, man, thanks for teaching us a little bit about fly fishing, kind of a crash course in an hour here, but looking forward to getting on the water with you, and might even get out smallmouth fishing with you this year. So
yeah, that'd be, I can't wait to get out fishing with you more. I know we'll get there one way or another. So
absolutely. I'm gonna drop you out of here. So appreciate it, Matt. Thank you for your time, and thank you for coming on the Noob Show.
Yeah, anytime. See you, bud.
Hey, see ya. So, Matt Nuttall from Moving Water Outfitters. Something to remind you all about, April 27th, 28th. Again, April 27th, 28th, Paddle and Finn will be at Del Hollow. It's going to be a smallmouth bash. It's always a great time from what I hear. I'll actually be there. I know John Rapp will be there. I even heard Brian the Thriller Schiller will be there as well. So sign up for that on Tourney X. Get all your reservations in. And I just want to thank all you guys for listening. And we'll catch you next time. We'll see you.
Join Captain Justin Leak and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the sky.